Packers all the time.
He was a field-tilting player, and the reason why Gabe and many others are so concerned is that this guy's on the field, he changes the offensive dynamic. They are a different offense when he is there.
Okay, most of the time.
You know, Homer calls Matt LaFleur soft all the time. Matt LaFleur is like Vince Lombardi compared to me.
It's Jason Wilde on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Reaction rolling in on the Carbless Talk and Text Line 800-990-3776. We will get to that reaction as the show rolls on. Now it's time for Jason Wilde. Good morning, Jason. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We are good. We saw the news about Isaiah McDuffie yesterday. What was your reaction when you saw not only that they were bringing him back, but also what they were bringing him back for?
Yeah, I don't think it's an outlandish amount to pay him. I mean, he started every game last season. He knows the system extremely well. He played for Jeff Hafley in college. He's just a steady, solid guy. And I flashed back to, and Chewy, I'm sure Coach has talked about you this way at some point, but, you know, he left the 49ers game briefly with an ankle injury, and then they played 4 days later on Thanksgiving, and no one thought he was going to play. Not Hafley. Not LaFleur. And then not only did he play, but he forced a fumble. He had seven tackles. I mean, he played really well. And it was almost like the Isaiah McDuffie Appreciation Society then the rest of the week. Like, LaFleur gushed about him. Hafley gushed about him. Campanile gushed about him. Hafley said he's what's right with this game. I love that guy. So I thought that they'd be able to bring him back on a reasonable, not expensive contract. And let's remember, they're excited about Edgerrin Cooper. They're excited about the direction Quay Walker's headed in. But they do play base once in a while, and they need a third linebacker on the field, and they want it to be Isaiah McDuffie. So this made perfect sense.
Jason, it appears that no one wants to trade for Jair, which would point to the direction of they're going to cut him. When is the optimal time to do that?
Yeah, that's a good question. Having talked to three different execs last week about it, everybody was all over the map about what to think they could get for him. But I always go back to the idea that once everyone knows you're going to cut a guy, it makes it a lot harder to trade that guy, right? I mean, you know, I don't know in the Deebo Samuel case, you know, I think it was pretty clear Washington really liked him, and they didn't give up a whole lot for a guy who, when healthy, has been a really good player. But I keep thinking about one of the exchanges that I had where, you know, it was pointed out that Jair's a different cat. And with what's gone on the last 2 years, there are going to be teams that are just going to be like, no thanks. Yeah, guy's been a great player when he's been healthy, but we can find somebody who's more reliable and less out there. So, you know, again, we'll see. I mean, it only takes one team. And the one thing that you have, if you're trying to trade a player, much like Davante Adams, right? I mean, everybody knows that they're going to cut him if they don't find a trade partner. The one thing you have is if you find a team that says, hey, I don't want to risk it, right? I want to acquire him because then I know, and it's worth giving up a pick to make sure that I don't have to compete with other teams to try and get this guy. I feel like Devontae, there's a chance of that. I'm not sure if there's a chance of that with Jair.
With Isaiah McDuffie now being locked up, Jason, who's next? Are they going to focus on someone like Eric Stokes and try to bring him back on a 1 year deal, kind of like they did with AJ Dillon? Or are they going to be looking at, you know, extending guys that are going into the last year of the deals, the guys like Quay Walker or Zach Tom or Rashid Walker?
Yeah, I would think McManus is the next guy that they need to figure out what they're going to do with him, because Goody has been very clear that he wants him back.
There's a deadline today, Jason. I'm just saying.
There is. I've heard that.
I'm just saying. You can franchise tag him and not have to worry about it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's true. And I look forward to writing that story on channel3000.com, and I'll lead with Gabe Neitzel told you. And then the readers will say, who's Gabe Neitzel?
Exactly.
Oh, that's that national guy from ESPN Radio. I think he obviously kicked so well that they want him back. I do think Goody likes to save his pennies or millions wherever he can. So we'll see if that occurs. But he would be the next guy on the to-do list, however you manage to keep his services.
Jason, we were talking about McDuffie this morning on our production meeting, and the guys were wondering what that means for Eric Wilson. What do you think it means for him? I guess Quay and Edgerrin are probably the other guys, as we know, that they want in that linebacking core. But we also noted that he will be 31, Wilson, later this year.
Yeah, I'm wondering what a production meeting is. I would say this. I would say that I think there's still room on the roster for Wilson. Like, you look at what they carried last year. They carried the two guys you mentioned, obviously. They carried Isaiah McDuffie, and they had Tyron Hopper, right? I mean, I think Eric Wilson showed last year that unless there's a team out there that now sees him, even at age 31, as more than a special team spot starter guy, I think Eric Wilson wants to be here. I think he really likes it here. He's one of those guys in the locker room. He's kind of, Chewy, he's kind of my new Jeff Thomason.
Because
he played more than JT. Like, one of those guys that doesn't play a whole lot, but you kind of make a good connection with him and you talk to him a lot, because oftentimes the starter is not in that stupid locker in the far corner of the locker room that you couldn't get to. I think there's value in him, right? And I think last year, I think he came back on like a minimum salary deal. I think he got like $167,000 as a signing bonus. Like, he's one of those guys that, you know, there are lots of people that say, well, I don't do this for the money. But I think he's one of the guys that truly does do it just for the game. And if he can get more money, great. And I'll be curious to see if, you know, not to bring this up further, but if you don't have to pay your kicker $6 million and you can pay him $3 million, that leaves you $2.5 million to play with to bring back an Eric Wilson. And let's be realistic about linebackers, right? I mean, no matter how good they are, that's one of the few violent positions left in the game. And even think back to your Super Bowl year with Ron Cox. Yeah. Like, you lose guys, and you need to have guys that you trust that can fill in, even if it's only for a few games. And frankly, one of my criticisms of Goody, and we've talked about this before, is that it's okay to have an older player who, if something happens and you're going to be without, say, Quay Walker for 3 games, by the way, like you were down the stretch of the regular season, it's good to have a guy that's played a hell of a lot of football, that you know he knows what he's doing. Like, do you want to put Tyron Hopper in there? And I understand that Goody's mentality is young guys have to go through growing pains and come out on the other side. But Tyron Hopper clearly didn't show them enough last season that they were willing to play him on defense. And if you have a chance to get a guy back, he doesn't cost you a whole lot. You know what he's made up of. You know how disciplined he is. You know he's got the best nickname on the team as Body Beautiful. I think that's a guy worth having on your football team.
Jason, do you believe that Zach Tom will get a deal done before training camp? Because if I'm his representative in today's NFL, I'm telling him to sit out. I mean, it can't be just okay for Jordan Love to do it. You know, Zach Tom will be grossly underpaid if he does not get a deal done next year. And I know he's probably not the type of guy to do that, but if I'm his agent, I would be telling him to. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I do think the timeline, though, is oftentimes, you know, deadlines spur action, as Andrew Brandt loved to say. So July, August make more sense. Look, he played, you know, he obviously had the torn pec last offseason. by his own admission. I talked to him for a while in the locker room on locker cleanout day, and he admitted he didn't play as well as he would like to or as he should have, and that it really did affect him, and he didn't want to say that during the year. But that's the risk you run, right? And so that's why you want to get – I am a huge supporter of the hold-in, right? Because you can't hold out anymore, or you can, but, I mean, that rule is kind of murky. Like, the way they wrote it after the last CBA made it sound like you could not avoid the fines if you held out, if you no-showed. And it feels like they found a workaround on that anyway. But if I'm him, I'm totally – I'm listening to Mark Chmura. Like, with the money that's involved today and with the way the game has trended and with the number of guys that don't play when they're not 100%, and you got guys like we just mentioned, Isaiah McDuffie, like, those guys are kind of a vanishing breed. And the smart guys go into this and say, hey, there's too much money at stake here. I need to take care of me. And you know this, unless you do it like Sterling Sharp did.
Yeah.
Guys support you. They have your back on that. They understand it. Except for Brett with Javon Walker. But other than that, like, that's like, I think guys would understand and they'd have no problem with Zach doing that. The crazy thing about that 2022 class is that all these guys are going into contract years at once. And I would argue that in some ways, I mean, it's a good problem to have, as coaches like to say, but in some ways, that does make it challenging. Like, look at that class.
This is really good.
You got the first two guys that are fifth-year option guys, but that number for Quay Walker, because it includes edge rushers, is way more than you want to pay him on a one-year deal. So do you extend him next? Then you got Devontae Wyatt, who I think you probably just play out the fifth-year option. You got the two wide receivers that you're, you know, one's injured, one's got a concussion issue, so you don't know where you're at with them. Probably let those guys play it out. You got both your starting tackles. And, oh, by the way, you've got Kingsley Enagbare, who would I would argue was your most consistent pass rusher last season. So that's a lot to figure out, and that's why there's part of me, even though Domofsky told us that agents are telling him that the Packers are going to be a player, I do find myself wondering if they're not going to squirrel away some money, thinking, hey, we got too many guys that we like that we want to keep. We got to figure out how to put some of that away and still be active in free agency.
Jason, I know you've been a big advocate that the Packers need to, at times, maybe do some more things for the fans. So I think I know where you stand on them raising ticket prices between $7 and $21, depending upon where you're sitting. But I'm more curious about your thoughts of the Packers letting fans know that if you have sold 100% of your tickets for multiple seasons, that you will not be able to renew those season tickets.
Yeah, you know, Gabe, first of all, you're right about that. And I always like to point this out just because I think it gives you a little bit of backstory. Like, I know people have heard me say this before, but my grandparents were among those who bought season tickets in the 1940s at State Fair Park in Milwaukee. Those have been in my family. I don't know. My brother might be one of those 100% sellers. I don't know. But I didn't love the fact that the Packers made that part of their press release, and they've been doing it for 4 years, and that this affects less than 1% of the 40,000 ticket accounts that they have. So as I was talking to Popke about, Aaron Popke, the director of public affairs, and I said, so less than 1%, so this is like less than 400 ticket accounts you're talking about here? He said, yeah, it's even less than that. And it was great misdirection by them, because if you look at the coverage of this, and again, if folks want to say that I'm you know, a dog with a bone on this and this really sticks in my craw, that's fair criticism, because I don't know if there's any other beat writer that's been complaining about this as loudly as I have. But to make the headline, and the coverage that they got was, this got a lot of attention, but to make that the centerpiece, when tickets jumped, as you said, $7 to $21
per seat per game. Like the other jumps, like last year was like 5 to 7 or something like that. Before that, it was like 3 to 5 or 4 to 7. Like 7 to 21 is the biggest jump that's happened by a team that has raised ticket prices 15 of the last 16 years, and the only time they didn't was after COVID. So, I understand they've got a waiting list, 7 million people long. Yes, there's other people that want the tickets. I get all that. This is the same organization that is trying to pay fewer taxes to the city of Green Bay. If my house starts on fire, I would like the fire department to have enough money to come put out the fire. So I don't know what exactly they're doing when they have a $536 million rainy day fund. It would be okay to take a holiday for 1 year and say to your fans as a PR move, hey, we're just going to sell more popcorn so you guys can afford your tickets. And if you're tired of seeing Honolulu blue and Vikings purple in the stands, think about why that's happening. Because there's so many people that are trying to defray the cost of their tickets by selling one game or two games. But I'll be honest, Gabe, I don't have a problem with that policy. It's multiple years. It's you didn't go to any games whatsoever. And to me, if that's what you're doing with the tickets, that's more of a business than it is a fandom.
You know, Jason, I hadn't even thought about the red herring element of it. I hadn't even thought about tucking that in there as a sort of, but look at how we're cracking down on all of the other fans who are in our stadium. We're going to protect home field advantage, and then sliding in also the idea of raising ticket prices. That didn't even occur to me. So really good insight there.
And they've been doing it for 4 years.
Right, yeah.
Like, this is not a new concept. So, again, well done. Bravo to them. They did a great job.
Jason, good stuff. We appreciate you hanging out with us. Have a good one, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, everybody. Take care. Be good.
Jason Wilde can be heard on Wilde and Tausch right after our show here on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. I want to dive into that announcement by the Green Bay Packers, to say nothing of the Friday news dump, which it was at 3 o'clock on Friday. It didn't occur to me that maybe the Green Bay Packers were sort of, look over here, shiny stuff, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain who is raising ticket prices at Lambeau Field. Let's talk about that right after this on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.